Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, your host. We've got a great show lined up, so let's get started. And this is Ashlyn Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 130. It is the week of May 20th, 2011. Thanks for downloading the show. This show is going to be probably part one of two parts regarding my experience at the Florida Keys Ultra Marathon. It's called the Keys 100. That's the actual title of the event. It has a 50-mile option, which is what I did, along with two buddies. We went down to the Florida Keys to do this ultra, and that was on May 14th. But this is a, if you found this podcast for the first time, I'd like to welcome you. I'm an ordinary, regular, nobody, middle of the pack, nothing, who is trying to do something extraordinary by running ultra marathons. And lest you think that I'm some type of elite runner, I'm not. I don't ever win anything, and probably never will when it comes to running, unless they had awards for last place. I didn't come in last place in this ultra. I actually came in, I think it was 52nd out of 84. 15 did not finish, and 11 did not start. Finishing time was 11 hours, 52 minutes, 22 seconds. So there's no mystery about whether I finished or not. I definitely did. But I've got a lot of, I'm going to dissect my my effort. And in order to do that in the best manner possible, at least from my perspective, I think I will do it in two parts. Otherwise, the podcast will probably go much longer than I usually want them to go. And, you know, people might even cut it off. So this show is going to be part one of two. And I did experience quite a bit of trouble down in Florida, dealing with the heat and blistering. And I'll go through and explain all that. And hopefully, if you've ever thought about running an ultra marathon, you might be able to learn a few things from my mistakes. If you have run ultra marathons before, you might laugh at some of my mistakes. So I kind of, I learn a little bit each time. If you're new to the show, I'll just tell you a little bit about my running history as an adult. That was my 17th marathon, 6th ultra, 6th marathon past the marathon distance, but 17th marathon overall, and my second 50-miler. So I'm not a newbie by any means, but I'm also not a true and tested veteran yet. I'm always learning stuff. What I want to do first before I get into the show is I want to hit on the email bag section of the show early. And the reason for that is because I got so many emails from people that listen to the show. And it was just, it's too many to go into detail about the content of their email. So I just want to kind of go down the list and thank each person. And you know who you are, and I'll mention your name. Heard from Mike out of Fort Thomas, Kentucky. Dave out of Greenville, South Carolina. Of course, Mandy out of Hollywood, Florida, or Fort Lauderdale, who just had a plethora of information about the show. And if you've been listening to the show, you'll know that we did two parts interviewing her in reference to her experience down in the Florida Keys. She's does lots of ultra events. And we might, in a couple shows from now, probably going to be doing kind of a Q&A with Mandy. She might actually guest host the show and ask me and Rodney some different questions about our experience in the race that I probably won't hit on in my race report, because she's got a lot more experience, so she'll know some different things to ask. So I heard from her. Tim checked in. Tom, my buddy Tom here in the center of the universe through the website. Ashlyndave.podbean.com. You can always go on that and submit a comment. I heard from Christine and Adam. And Adam had emailed me a request. He wants some of the blister photos from my feet, which I did take a few. I had some interesting blistering. Nothing broke, but it was just real painful. He had also mentioned, and one thing I'm going to get in probably part two, because in part two of this particular episode, it would probably be a little bit more nitty-gritty. details in reference to what happens to your body during these ultra events. At least someone like me, a regular person, not someone who can go out and run 50 or 100 miles with little damage to the body. I've also heard from Steven, running the straight and narrow. Appreciate it. David. And David said he's got 350s himself, and he forgot to submit his name for the Stand Up and Be Counted campaign. So definitely got you on that, David. Appreciate that. And that's actually David McRunner, maniac number 1822. So good to hear from you, David. Appreciate it. Heard from Sandy, Mike, a.k.a. Dirt Dog, over at the Dirt Dog podcast. Matt from Team Incognito, Dr. Smitty. And Dr. Smitty, thank you so much for the headlamp. Email me your address and I'll mail it back to you before I forget. I bought a padded envelope so I can mail that back to you. Unless you're coming up for the Patrick Henry half, which you'll see as the course has changed. I'll see you that day. But anyway, I got to mention the headlamp real quick. Several people told me that was the brightest headlamp they've ever seen. And Greg, it worked perfect. So thank you so much for lending that out. I really, really do appreciate that. I heard from Kelly, Team Incognito, David out of Mechanicsville. And this is Mechanicsville Dave. He's the reason I was nicknamed Ashland Dave when we did half marathon training together. He had actually emailed in reference to the door prizes at races. And so did Dale. Let me just hit on this real quick. In the last show in the race director's report from the 10K, I did ask if anybody had any input or ideas about how to handle door prizes at races when you have different events going on. Dave simply said that he wasn't interested in the door prizes. He runs the race, he leaves, and gets on with his day. Dale suggested that they be posted at the finishing time, where the finishing times are posted, because you have people doing different events and they might not hear their name. So, Dale, I really appreciate that idea. And we might actually, we'll probably discuss that when we plan for next year's 10K. Also heard from Helmet, and appreciate that, Helmet and Shelly. And Helmet has actually launched a new website, Cranked Calorie, which is an online magazine involving biking, running, and refueling. And yes, Helmet, I'm happy to link that in the show notes at ashlanddave.podbean.com. So check that out. That's a new website that he's launched. Heard from Shelly. And Chris in Georgia, and Chris knocked me a little bit on mentioning watching the royal wedding. Chris, I that was very funny, and I appreciate that. And hey, what can I say, man? I got stuck watching that on TV because it was on every news channel. So that's the email bag section of the show, and I wanted to hit on that quick, like I said, because so many people emailed me, those folks, and I really do appreciate that. I was able to see a lot of those before I ran the race, and made me feel good that there's people out there that wish me well instead of wishing me evil. So, all right, well, let's get into the race report. Got quite a bit here that I'm gonna hit on, and like I said, I'm probably gonna do a part two that will, let's see, just trying to, okay, here are my notes here. I did make some notes. The reason I'm going to do a part two is because more than likely when I go back and edit this episode before I publish it on the website and that goes into iTunes, I'm going to remember some things that I wanted to talk about. And just a few minutes ago before I started recording the show this morning, I was reading my friend John's race report. And his race report had, what we do is we share race reports amongst each other. We have a group internet page that we use and look at and share information. And he would have remembered several things that I didn't. And so I will probably come back and do a part two and talk more about my ultra experience, because it was a really good one. And it's taken me a few days to actually feel good about what I did, because my feet are feeling better today. I mean, I can walk. I'm not on crutches or anything like I was last time. And it just hasn't really hit on me yet. I was very emotional at the finish line. Not carrying on and crying or anything, but it was just a very full emotion of what I accomplished. And then as the last couple of days have unfolded, as I reflect a little bit more on it, especially when I made some of these notes, I am feeling a lot better about the way things played out. So, okay, we hit on the emails, and I guess I should give a little bit of a warning to the listeners of the show, because some of the stuff that I'm going to mention in this part and maybe more of part two is, it's not really real polite stuff. Running a marathon running an ultra marathon is not, you know, your body goes through some transitions, and it's, you're not exactly the most polite person out there on the course with your crew, with other runners, or to the public. And because you have issues that come up, and you know, your body has all kinds of let's say crevices and areas where things rub. And I personally think that people who, if anybody's thinking about doing any kind of ultra marathon, these are some of the, this is the kind of forum where you can learn about that. I've listened to other podcasts, and it is just, you know, there are very few that actually talk about some of the things that are a little bit more embarrassing. And so I'm going to mention a few of those things at the risk of, you know, being gross or branded as someone who's, you know, dives into that kind of discussion. And if you wonder what I'm talking about, I'm going to talk about what happens to your ass, basically, when you run, you know, all freaking day. You have some issues, and I'll talk about that probably in part two. So that's the warning. So if that kind of stuff is grosses you out, you know, fast forward, you know, delete. If you're interested in some of the finer details of ultra running, at least from an ordinary nobody, middle of the pack, regular, nothing like me, who's going to experience those kind of things and then be able to manage them and continue to move on and finish the race, then I'll share some of that, and perhaps somebody can learn from that. I finished. There's no mystery there, like I said. Otherwise, I would have called this episode, you know, Happy DNF. Copy that from, I guess, Dirt Dog. I think he had a show called Happy DNF. DNF means did not finish. But there's quite a story in my experience. I'm really happy to share that for anyone who is an ultra runner, a regular ultra runner. You know, not, this is not a show for, you know, elites, people that win. You know, they won't learn anything from me. You know, I learn from them when I read about their experiences. However, you know, so this is just this is about my experience during my second 50 miler and what I did differently after the first one in order to be a little more successful. And I took basically an hour off of my previous finishing time, even though you can't really compare the two races because the courses are different and the whole environment was different. However, you know, whenever you cover 50 miles shorter than you did the last time, you know, that's something to be kind of, you know, self-impressed with. So that I did. I was self-impressed. So anyway, and also if there's anybody who listens to this show who is not a marathoner, which, you know, I know I've got plenty of listeners that, you know, don't run marathons, and, you know, you might be wondering, why would you want to do a 50? So I'm going to touch on that here first. So why the 50 miler? Well, in my brain, for whatever reason, that's the minimal mileage that I define as an ultra marathon. Now, it's not to say that a 50K or even a 40 miler, which there's an ultra called the Sterling Gym 40 miler, and then there's also one in that's in Tennessee, and then there's one in West Virginia called the I think it's the Skyline 40 trail race. It's not that that a 50K, which is 31 miles, or a 40 miler is not that, or even you know, an 8-hour endurance event where you clear you know, the 50K mark, which is, I guess, sometimes the cutoff for whether you get a prize or not. It's not to say that those are not ultra marathons. They are. It's just that in my perspective, just for my own accomplishment, I think a 50 is like the standard ultra marathon distance. I don't know why I think that for some reason. So I wanted to do a 50, and you know, for some reason doing the 50 is the mark in my mind of an ultra marathon. So I did one last June of 2010, and I got hurt. And for me, getting hurt running is not the way I want to go. I don't go out and do the marathons that I do and the long training runs and the double long training runs in order to, you know, knock my knees out of commission or to blister my feet so bad so I can sit around and you know, say, oh, look what I did. I ran so hard. I hurt myself. You know, that I can endure this. I can do this. That's not the point. The point is to do the event and return to your regular life, you know, after a day or so of recovery and not, you know, living with pain. Now, last year when I ran the North Face 50 miler, I think it was June 5th of 2010 up in Northern Virginia along the Potomac River, I was out of work for 2 weeks because of what I did to my feet. They basically were, well, it was called maceration. I think that's the word. The balls of my feet, essentially, the skin layers essentially broke off and got jammed up under my toes, and I had raw exposed feet that I was running on. I didn't know that. I just figured my feet hurt from the running. And so I was bandaged up for 2 weeks and on crutches and in a wheelchair. And I wasn't going to have that happen again because I was a burden on my family. I couldn't go to work. Hell, I couldn't even get in the shower. It was brutal. And I decided that there is a way to you know, succeed in running the 50 if you're a regular person. I mean, I was determined to do it. I found the Keys race. It was a flat road ultra. And I thought that would be a way for me to accomplish the 50 miles without getting hurt. So here I was. So after that, you know, because I got hurt, I set out to do another one, and where I didn't break. And because, and I've talked about this before in the show, and I got to just mention it again, is because last year I never mentally broke down, never mentally wanted to quit. My body broke. My mind didn't break. I'm not saying that I was happy-go-lucky and just thrilled the whole time. I wasn't. It's just that my mind never just closed down to, you know, to this little, you know, little world right in front of my face where I just said, you know what, this is it. What am I doing out here? I'm done. I never wanted to give up. It's just that my body got hurt. So I was determined to get through this race without either one happening. So I did that one. So on May 14th, I did that. I was, and it was hard. It was freaking hard. There's no doubt about that. It was very hot from minute one to minute 712, which if I did my math right, I think 712 minutes is about 11 hours and 52 minutes, 22 seconds, if I can do the math right. And I did it, and I didn't break. Now, I'm damaged, and what I also did that was smarter this time around is I took off work after the race the whole week. And, you know, and planned another trip. So, you know, instead of, you know, the embarrassment of, you know, well, you know, oh, Cliff got hurt again. You know, he went down to Florida and, you know, ran another 50 mile and look what happened to him again. This way I can kind of hide a little bit from work, you know, that I'm damaged goods a little bit. Although I got shoes and socks on now, and as a matter of fact, I'm planning on cutting my grass this afternoon, and here it is just 4 days after the race. And my legs are not sore anymore, and I really think the running and walking helped. And I'll get into some of that probably in part two about how I managed to cover the distance specifically, because that's what I wanted to talk about. Talk about logistics for a little bit. Rodney went down there with me, and both of our wives went down, Tamara, and my wife's name is Monica. We had one vehicle for the two runners, and the way this race works is that it starts in Marathon Key and goes to Key West, which is 50 miles. Starts around mile marker 51 and ends at mile 1 in an area called Smathers Beach, right on the Atlantic Ocean. And we had one vehicle. We rented one vehicle. We were staying in a condo together, and that got to be a little bit difficult because Roddy and I got separated, and so the ladies were stressing a bit, trying to find him, find me, because after a while, just like Mandy said, you're going to want crew access very often. I kind of figured, every 4 to 5 miles, you're consuming too much liquid and 4 to 5 miles is not 40 to 50 minutes during this race. That could be an hour to 2 hours, depending on your rate, how fast you're moving. So we had one vehicle for two runners, and you can access your crew as often as you want as long as you find a safe place to pull off the road. And it's Route 1, which is the only road that goes through the Florida Keys all the way through. Keeping in mind that there's also a 100-mile race that started at 6 a.m. on May 14th on Saturday. We started at 10 a.m., so there was people on the whole road. So that was a mistake, doing one vehicle for two runners. Not that it was anything we could have fixed, because we just... It didn't make sense to rent two cars down there, and the ladies did. They did a great job. We didn't run the same pace, so it became kind of a problem for our crew. It was manageable, but it was a problem. And what we did is we had three coolers in the back of the car. One just like Mandy had recommended, one for ice cold washcloths and towels, you know, soaked in ice cold water. The other was a cooler full of clean ice, just nothing but clean ice. And then the other was the drinks that you could put your hands in and out of. And what we did is we went to Publix down there, bought three styrofoam coolers. I think they're about $5 or $6 a piece, and they worked perfect. The three of them lined up side by side in the back of the vehicle, And it couldn't have, I don't think it could have worked any better, in my opinion. At least from my perspective, that worked great. Now, we did, you know, it was nice to get up to the car and be able to sit down. Sometimes I sat on the tailgate. Sometimes the car was still running, so it was hot. I didn't like the heat on my legs. I'd get in the back of the car. It was too small. I couldn't take my shoes and socks off to tend to my feet, which I did several times. I probably lost at least an hour in time, you know, tending to my feet, which I will, I can't remember if I'm talking about this one or not. I think I will talk a little bit about it in this episode, but I'm going to get very, I'll get very technical in the next episode about what I, the problems I had with my feet and how I was able to get through there. Okay, where was I here? So we had three coolers, you know, food. Now, okay, I talked about the 4 to 5 miles. I don't know what I was thinking when I was, it was a fantasy thinking that I would want crew access like every 4 miles. Because it was so much more than that. I needed liquid about every 20 to 30 minutes. And that's, like I said, it's not every 2 to 3 miles. That can be about every mile and a half to 2 miles because of the heat. And, you know, I didn't want to carry too much water. I really didn't. What I, this course, which I'll kind of go into that now. The course start where it started, you have about 4 miles before you get to the 7 mile bridge where you cannot access your crew at all. So 7 miles could take you, you know, anywhere from, you know, hour and 10 minutes, at least from my regular pace, to an hour and a half to cover. And the 7 mile bridge, which is, that's exactly what it's called, 7 mile bridge, has no cover at all from the sun. So you got to carry, it was recommended that you carry more water than you think you're going to need, more fuel than you think you're going to need for that bridge. So I bought a Camelback, as a mini mule Camelback specifically for that purpose, which in the last show I think I talked about how it leaked. What I was able to do was put in another bladder from another piece of equipment I had, and that worked perfect. So I was carrying that, and I think I had two bottles, maybe one bottle in my hand, and I realized that everything worked out fine with a 7 mile bridge, with the exception of one time John blew a snot rocket out and it circled around and kind of hit me, but that was one of the funnier moments. My wife filled up the Camelback bladder too much after that, and I decided that's when I decided I did not want to carry water on my back for the duration of the day, but I was going to carry the two water bottles. And in hindsight, what I should have done was purchase larger water bottles than the 16-ounce ones that I had from the All I Got Ultimate Direction water bottles with the hand handles, which are excellent pieces of equipment. However, what I needed was a larger bottle, 20 ounces or more, which I should have done was fit in there. I'll make a note to do that for the next time, that's for sure. So you had to think a little bit about your water management. I kind of got off on a little bit of a tangent there, but you had to kind of think through your logistics a little bit on some of the areas where you weren't going to have crew access, and that 7 mile bridge being one of those. So the course was, like I said, marathon key to Key West, all in Route 1. It was straight, no hills to speak of, a couple bridges that went up, you know, arched over so ships could get underneath. But it was very easy to, you know, to know where you were going. There was no question, you know, where you went. Everything was Route 1 to the south. Mostly pavement, black pavement, very hot. There was some areas we could run on the shoulder, which was kind of crushed gravel, which I didn't really care for too much because after my feet started blistering a bit, it hit different sensitive areas. And then, of course, there was a slant on the pavement shoulder, which started bothering me too. Funny how everything starts to bother you after a while, but you just still manage a way to get through it. And of course, nothing would really bother you that much if you weren't staring right down at it, you know, and I'll talk about that. So the bridges were concrete. The views were simply gorgeous. They really were. I mean, you're running with the Atlantic Ocean on your left, the Gulf of Mexico, I think in some areas they called it the Bay of Florida or Florida Bay on your right. You can see the water virtually the whole time, and the views were simply gorgeous. If I could keep my head up, I mean, it was tough to run when you after a while, and I'll break this down a little bit probably more in part two. You know, after a while, it's hard to run with your head up because you start getting, okay, God, I got over 20 miles to go. I got 25 miles to go. You know, I'm so tired. What's going on with me? It's hard to keep your head up and enjoy this scenery and have it be a pleasing sight when you're in a lot of physical discomfort. So I really did have to do a lot of self-reminding to lift my head up look to the left when I'm on a bridge and, you know, see the water, see what I can see down in the water, look at the ships, look at the boats, which I did from time to time, and I'm glad I did. And I'm glad I remembered that I needed to do that, because that was one of the reasons I wanted to go down and do this race, is because of the scenery, and I'd never been to the Florida Keys before. It was a point-to-point, which in my book are the best types of races, best types of training runs. When you start at one point, get to the next point, and you know your transportation's covered back to wherever you're going. It's one of the reasons that I did seek this out, not only because it was a road ultra and I hadn't been to Key West, but it was a point-to-point and not a you know, looping around thing where you're going to see the same stuff or, you know, winding through neighborhoods. This was on Route 1, southbound, against traffic virtually the whole way, you know, point to point, you know, mile marker 51 to mile marker 1, you know, give or take, I think 100 yards or so. You know, you're running and you're seeing the mile markers on your way down, and I really liked the course. It was hard, but like I said, you know, but I really like the point to point. I really think how it's cool that I can look on a map and of the Florida Keys, and you know, I'll always remember running that ultra marathon because I'll know that I ran from that point to the next point, and even more so for the people that did the 100 miler and even the relay teams, that they can look at that whole stretch of islands and know that they ran from one to the other. No hills, like I mentioned, the bridges were over the water, were never really high enough to feel any gravity effect. Didn't really matter that much because it was bad enough in the heat, and I'll talk more about the heat here in just a minute. And I did talk about the slanting of the shoulder, which is nothing nobody can do about. That's just the nature of it. But there were lots of times where it was actually a path next to Route 1, which I liked a lot. It was an older asphalt path that had faded a lot, so the heat didn't attract it. And there were lots and lots of bridges that actually had a side bridge, probably the old route or maybe the old railroad that went down there, that had been turned into a recreational path that was plenty wide, flat, no slant. And I really did enjoy being on that part because it got you away from the traffic a little bit. But I will say there were some parts, yeah, where you were probably just feet from tractor trailers going the opposite direction, you know, large RVs hauling boats or hauling a car or you know, trucks hauling a boat or whatever. But the race director, Bob, who was simply outstanding, ambassador for the sport, excellent race director and an all-around great guy, because we got a chance to meet him and talk to him, he arranged to have cones, so the shoulder was coned off at the white line on the 7 mile bridge, and that really was cool. Obviously a lot of work on someone's part, and so Bob, thank you for that. I'm not sure you listen to the podcast, but maybe Mandy can pass that on. And Bob, I am going to send you a lengthy email thanking you. You were very gracious, and I know you were up for probably 48 hours. It had to have been. Okay, well, let me talk about the heat. And the heat was basically like blowing a hairdryer in your face all day. That's what it felt like on high, you know, maybe 6 inches from your face. And then, you know, having a body dryer at the same heat blowing on your body all day. And maybe not really blowing, but just kind of staying right in front of you. It was hot, no doubt about it. It was, I think the actual temperatures were not even 90, but it's the humidity that was just simply brutal. I can't say enough about that. It was constant, never changed, didn't let up in the evening, and because I finished in the dark. Now, you know, when we talked with Bob and talked with Mandy and some of the pre-ultra interview podcasts that we did, parts 1 and 2, talking about this race, because she knew a lot about it, she said a lot of people go down there and underestimate the heat. Well, we got down, and that's what Bob said as well, and we got down there the Wednesday before the race to feel the heat. So I did not underestimate it from that aspect. I knew what I was getting into. However, what I did underestimate was my body's ability to adapt to it after being down there for a few days. I did underestimate that. So maybe that is just a little bit of a, what I'm trying to do is avoid saying I didn't know how hot it was going to be, but I knew it was going to be hot. I mean, I live in Virginia. We were well over 100 degrees for, I think, a week straight last year, and I got out there and tried to train in that. But it's a different type of heat in Florida. It's tropical heat, and I don't know if that's true or not, but that's, to me, it was a different kind of heat. I've even spent a lot of time in Mississippi where it is just brutally hot. And Florida, that far south, I mean, I know we were close to, you know, just, what, 90 miles from Cuba. It was just a different kind of heat that I was not ready to run in. Now, I didn't do any training runs down there while before the race. You know, we rested the whole time and sat out by the pool and, you know, got used to the heat. But that day, being out in it all day, I really did underestimate my ability to adapt to it and maneuver in it, which I finally did recover and be able to function, but it took a couple hours. So what I did is I am going to talk more about how the heat affected me, and this is going to again be in part two. I keep referring to part two, but part two is going to be a lot of the nitty gritty details of what happened that day. What I'll do is a little bit talk about blistering, and again I'll get more specifics in the next show because I don't want this one to go too long. I could probably talk for 2 hours about my experience that day because there's just, you know, so much to talk about, so much I want to put in the show. Last year doing the North Face 50, like I said, the balls of my feet came off essentially, okay, and they had to be healed, not reattached. One of them, I think I did save the big flap of skin, but that had to heal up. And skin heals, it's very resilient. You just got to give it a chance, unless it's burned off, you know, by flame or chemicals. This was just friction burn. But this time around, the balls of my feet were fine. I duct taped them, I taped my feet. I didn't tape any other parts of my feet other than the bottoms of my feet, because that's what I had focused on in training. I used the duct tape and during long training runs, and everything worked fine. I never had to reapply it. Even when I did the 31 miler with Rodney, the tape did move around a little bit, but it didn't come off, and it never, you know, never, the skin underneath never got so bad. Well, this was a little bit different. Was it my right? My left foot, the ball of the foot, the skin was becoming a little bit loose on the side, and I don't remember what mile it was because a lot of it's just a blur. Even though the miles didn't go by in a blur, it's just exactly where I was. I don't remember, but I remember looking. I think it was past the 30-mile mark, but I remember looking at it and telling my wife that if that broke open, I was going to stop because I wasn't going to endure what I had last year, 2 weeks of agony, you know, waiting to go back to work. You know, can't do anything with my daughter, can't, you know, get out and do anything in the yard because I'm hurt. I wasn't going to, you know, I'm not above a DNF. I'm not going to sacrifice, you know, it'd be one thing if there was, you know, $1 million at the end, prize money for all finishers, or even maybe $10,000. Yeah, I'd go out and take the 2 weeks out. But, you know, it's a finisher's medal, and all you have is your own pride. And, you know, I wasn't willing to damage my feet for a finisher's medal. And, you know, I would maybe come down there again and try to finish the race someday, but not this time around. If my foot broke open, and it did not, so I was able to continue on. I did have some problems, though. It seemed like the friction moved from the bottom of my foot to the sides of my heels and strange places between my toes, which I had never experienced any type of blistering before, ever. And well, with the exception of my little toe on my left foot tends to be jammed up real close to the second bigger toe, and not really sure why. I did have some issues with that. I really should just get that toe amputated because it causes all kinds of problems, and it's kind of formed kind of strange. Maybe it's just the shoes. But anyway, I'll talk about that in part two, the specific blistering, which I didn't really know what to do about other than just you know, clean my feet off each time and load up with more Vaseline. So it was blistering that I had never experienced before, so I wasn't really sure exactly what to do with it during the race. So I spent a lot of time drying off my feet, cleaning them, cooling them, you know, applying stuff on them again, which I guess was good. I'm going to have to get, you know, refer to my Fixing Your Feet book again for these new problems if I'm ever going to do another 50, which my wife did get me on video after the race saying I'm never going to do it again because it's just too much for my feet. However, here I am sitting here doing the podcast wondering, is it possible to get through a 50 with no, you know, foot problems, which now that's my new challenge. So I'll have to secretly find another race and see if I can do that again. it's not going to be this year, maybe not even next year. I'm not even sure. Maybe I'll stick to stuff that's not so long, that you know, still I have a real good feeling of accomplishment and I don't get injured. Because I can run a 50K now without anything, pretty much no problems. No problems happening to me. Okay, so gosh, I've lost in my notes here. So I probably lost, I changed my shoes and socks four times, and I probably lost at least 15 minutes each time sitting in the car, tending to my feet, making sure that everything was done. And I'll specifically talk about that in part two about what I did. There'll be a lot more specific stuff in that one, not to mention some of the, just kind of the events over the course of the day, what happened at different mile markers. So that added up to probably about an hour that I lost. It was well worth it though, otherwise I would have never finished. So, you know, part of me is thinking, okay, if I didn't have any foot problems and I didn't have any mental problems, which I did, maybe I could have, you know, come in at 11 hours. I don't know. My previous 50 mile, I was 12:48. This one was 11:52. No trails, no mountains, you know, but it had the heat and it was a lot different. So part two, we'll get to the nitty gritty, mind over matter, undercarriage care, how I managed the final 2 hours when I thought all of a sudden I'm going to make a 12-hour finish if I get my ass in gear. And that's what I'll be in part two. So make sure you come back for the next show, which I will put out probably after I get back from my other trip. And I'll produce that one, and we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty. Got to meet Pam Reed down there, who was the overall winner for the Badwater Ultra Marathon in 2002, and I think also 2003. Talking with Bob Becker, the race director. Nice guy. We'll talk a little bit about him. And I'm going to also talk about how, this is kind of funny, I'll just mention it here. The final 100 yards of before the finish line, I was actually interrupted by relay teams, and I actually stopped running just to let them get ahead of me. So I didn't finish in a pack of people. I'll talk about that and lots of other. Talk about a little bit about Rodney's experience, John's, some other thoughts of Key West from a pretty much a regular, ordinary nobody, middle of the packer, who got 52 out of, 52nd out of 84 finishers, not too bad. Especially when 15 didn't finish and 11 didn't even start. And not bad for a pretty incredibly difficult race. So we'll do all that in the next show. I just frankly don't have enough time to record all that for today's show. And I don't want to lose you if you're interested in what I have to say. So I'll do that in part two. Hope you come back. This is Ashland Dave, and I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. Y'all have a good week.